The views and content expressed on the following program are provided solely for informational and entertainment purposes. They do not constitute legal advice. A podcast is not a substitute for retaining a competent, licensed attorney to advise you on your specific legal situation. How's it going, everybody? Welcome to the show. It is time for Break the Business, where we empower indie creators and have some fun along the way. I'm Ryan Carella, and it is a pleasure to have you here this week for our very first episode, our maiden voyage on Volume.com. Drink it in, people. We have made it to the live streaming promised land. I am so excited to join this fantastic platform. This has been in the works for just way too long. For months, we've been talking to these people, trying to get to this day. So much prep involved. Ben and John and just Michelle and the whole freaking gang to bring us here. So much heavy lifting, so much back and forth, so many unreasonable demands by me on graphics and everything else. And we finally made it here. April 18th, 2024, our Volume.com launch. And I could not be happier. Thank you all for welcoming Break the Business into your fantastic community. And we're just really excited for it. Let's go ahead and bring out our co-host this week to keep that conversation going. Musician, investor, and frontman for Gideon King and City Blog. Gideon King's here. Hey, Gideon.
Howdy. Congrats. Happy day.
A happy day for all of us. You are among the reasons why we're here right now. One of our many engaging co-hosts that keep the conversations fun and interesting and informative. And apparently you're the good luck charm because, you know, you're our most recent addition to our gang of co-hosts, Gideon. And Volume.com wasn't talking to us before you showed up. You must be the magic touch that has brought us to this fantastic platform. And it's good to be talking to you, man.
If there's a lot of money to be made, I want it all from this show. I want all the credit and I want all the money. I'm just saying that right now, Ryan. Now that you're exploding, I want in.
Oh yeah, see, now that we're finally getting a little bit of traction, now Gideon King's here with his hand out. I thought this was about the love of the game, man.
I'm all in, brother. I'm all in.
Love that. And the indie creators out there are grateful to have your insight, not just through your work as a creative professional and the work that you do with Gideon King and City Blog making great music, but your business background that you bring in, your investment background, you're involved with so many different music and tech businesses that you always bring such great perspective. Gideon's just one of our many co-hosts that we bring in each week that bring in diverse perspectives throughout the industry to help keep you all informed. I think we should start, Gideon, by welcoming the Volume.com audience, our new audience, which is a little bit of an explanation about what this show is about, what we aim to do each week so that we can get everybody caught up. So Break the Business it's hosted by me. My name's Ryan Carella. I'm an entertainment lawyer. I'm an author. I work with independent creators. And I started this show, oh my God, too many years ago. I think we're 9 years ago. We've done over 400 episodes. So it's been about 9 years. And we started this show with a very simple mission. We wanted to empower independent creators. We wanted to give them advice. We wanted to make them informed about the news. We wanted to bring the most important voices in entertainment to them so that they could become the best versions of themselves. And along the way, we learned that our message resonates the best when we also don't take ourselves too seriously. So we like to joke around. We like to talk about pop culture. We like to make this a safe and fun space for indie creators to thrive. And I think over the years, we've done a pretty nice job with that. We started off as just a little podcast in a tiny room in my parents' house, all the way to where we are now on Sirius XM 145, which is where we are every Mondays, and now on live streaming services, including Volume.com, which is, to me, kind of the culmination of everything we've been able to do with this program and just reaching this fantastic audience of musicians, of creative professionals. This is just fabulous. So if you're looking for entertainment industry news, you're looking for advice on how to move your career forward as a musician, as an entertainer, as a creative professional, you're looking for interviews with important people in the industry, or you're just looking for some fun pop culture talk with interesting people, break the business is the place to be. And one last thing before we get your perspective on this, Gideon, because I know you love this show as well. You love the contributions you can make. But I do want to also say to the fans out there who love volume.com, this show is at its best. Break the Business is at its best when the audience contributes. We're the best version of ourselves when you all are emailing us to propose show topics, when you email us questions for us to answer on the show, when you just send comments in, whether it's, you know, informative comments, whether you make fun of us, whatever it is, that interaction makes this show the best. We want to help you. So if you have questions you want us to answer, if you want advice from us, we are here for you. So you can email us at breakthebusiness@gmail.com. You can send comments into volume.com. Our producer Lauren's looking at those comments. And, you know, we'll interact with you. We'll talk to you all on the show. We want this to be as informative as it can because we want to be good citizens here at volume.com and make positive contributions to the community. I mean, this is exciting, Gideon. I'm not going to lie. I'm pretty stoked.
And it's a cool mission because, you know, I've been around a lot of different communities. And one thing about the artist community, particularly music community, is I've never met so many smart, talented people who are presented with such a tidal wave of paths, so many of which are scary, dangerous, and finished off with dead ends. So, you know, to the extent there's any guideposts, it's very cool. And hopefully this show is part of creating those guideposts.
It's what we aim to do. It's what I've done or try to do in my legal practice for as long as I've been practicing. And it's you know, what you and I try to do as voices in the media on this.
Yeah,
we're on the side of the indie creators. There are plenty of forces in the music industry, in the entertainment industry, who are very much on the side of major media companies and big tech and a lot of people, a lot of different forces who oftentimes are not aligned with the goals of independent creators. That's not us. We are here for you. We want to use our powers for good every week on this show. And I know that our guests this week, who are executives at Volume.com, have an aligned mission there. Volume.com was built to empower independent creators, to help them get paid, to help them bring their art to a worldwide audience. And so we are honored in the second segment to be joined by our guest this week, Ben Holst, the Director of Creative Media for Volume.com, and John Romero, the Chief Marketing Officer for Volume.com. I am excited to chat with them, Gideon, not just because, you know, we want to thank them for giving us this amazing platform to connect with all these amazing creative professionals on this platform, but also so they can give some advice to the creators about how they can live stream effectively, how they can get integrated into the volume.com community, maybe start an account on the platform. It's a really cool platform. They're not only connected with artists, you know, a lot of artists use volume.com to get their music out there through live streaming, but they've also partnered with a lot of really, really celebrated venues throughout the country and are like the exclusive broadcast partner for these venues. They work with a lot of charitable causes, just really amazing people, great community all around.
Everybody knows volume.com.
I like that's a good slogan. They should use that. Everybody knows volume.com. And they're based in South Florida, which we love. You should know, viewers and listeners, Break the Business is primarily based out of Miami, Florida. I do my show here from my studio in Miami, Florida. Our producer Lauren and my sister, she's in Miami. Our co-hosts come from all over the country. So we're not just a Miami show, but we got a lot of Miami roots here. And it's one of the things that I think makes us really, really special. And, you know, we love the Miami roots that volume.com has as well. I think we should get into some proceedings here. So to give the viewers and listeners a bit of a lay of the land of the setup of this show, we start the first half of the show by just talking about some entertainment news, having some discussion, some advice for indie creators about some of the important topics of the day. And then in the second half of the show, that's when we bring out our guests. So that's when we're going to talk to Ben and John from volume.com. But first, Gideon, I want to chat with you about a clip that you sent me. You're always my go-to voice on just the changes in the music industry. You've worked in this industry long enough. You know enough people in this industry that I think you have a good beat on how much the industry has changed and how much the perception of it has changed. And so you sent me this really interesting clip from Ted Gila and Rick Beato talking about sort of how the industry has shifted specifically for young people. And the topic of the video clip we're about to send you of these two gentlemen talking or the clip that we're about to play of these two gentlemen talking, is the idea of whether or not young people today are less engaged in music than they used to be. And if so, whose fault is it? Is it the music industry's fault? And so, Lauren, if you could play this clip for us, because it was pretty mind-blowing for me.
Worry about our musical culture. If the most important people in music now are the CEO of Apple, Google, Spotify, these are the most powerful people in music. None of them are from a music background like you and me. They don't genuinely care and know about music, and now they're making decisions on what everyone's going to hear based on profit maximization. I think that not only explains the fake artist situation, but also why people don't love music as much as they used to.
I talk to kids all the time. I have young kids. I talk to their friends, and they're just not engaged in music.
We have not given them a music culture that can engage them to the extent that they're capable of being engaging. People want to have mind-expanding experiences, and they want these transformative experiences from music. And I believe that the power brokers in the music business are letting them down.
So there's two different layers to that, Gideon, that I think are interesting and I want to get your perspective on. First, this idea that the most powerful voices in the music industry are now tech people. So a generation or two ago, you ask, who are the most powerful people in the music industry? You might say people like Clive Davis, L.A. Reid, record executives. And now today, you could argue that the most powerful voices in the industry are tech people, people like Tim Cook or Daniel Ek. And, you know, what are the implications of that? Like, is it losing some art in the process? And the second idea of, are young people less engaged in music now because of the increasing reliance on tech in the industry? What do you think of this, Gideon?
I mean, that guy's speech was like, one thing I just can't stand in life is when people just sort of howl at reality without balance. And I think that's the problem with his commentary. Yes, kids may not be as engaged with music in as deep a way as they used to, but they're plenty freaking engaged, okay? Remy Wolf, Chapel Sloan, Olivia Rodrigo, ticket sales spiking. We tend to just sort of become curmudgeons and forget facts in the wake of change. And the facts are that kids are incredibly engaged in music in a way that may not appeal to me as much as the connection between fans of the Eagles, okay, or Dave Matthews, but they're very engaged. And I wouldn't also say, I think he's sort of like decrying this whole construct without really understanding what's happening. Sure, the CEOs of Google and Spotify, they're powerful, but it's really the modality that is the king of the world now. It's the mediums that are the king of the world. It's the algorithms. And those have disparate impacts. On the negative side, between people compressing songs and making them 2 minutes and doing everything they can to thread themselves into the algorithm in Spotify, and of course social media, there's a soul-sucking element to music now that's really, really sad and really depressing. It used to be that people would wait 48 hours to see Stevie Nicks walk by for like 15 seconds. Now we know what, like, you know, Taylor Swift is having for breakfast, whether she's having oatmeal with protein powder or she's having a kale shake. Okay. So like we know all that now. And so there's a sort of demystification and the mythical nature of artists is completely defanged because of the medium. The flip side of all that is, while those people may be very powerful because they own the pipes that reach the kids' ears and eyeballs, never before have artists been so able to go direct to consumer. Never before has the process of releasing a song been so democratized. Never before have we broken free from the chains of labels in such a way that to become successful, again, to sort of make a reference to Dave Matthews, you have to tour and kill yourself and be the one out of billion people that can actually make it in that construct. Now you can go viral on Instagram and then make music. You can go viral on Spotify and then become big on Instagram. So, like, the thing that bothers me is in life is lack of balance. And so while he makes some good points, and there are powerful people at the head of Google and Spotify, man, if you have people like that that don't know a damn thing about music, I can say one thing. Their lack of knowledge and their blissful ignorance about music has actually in some ways democratized the process of distribution and ingestion of music in ways never that were unthinkable 25 years ago. And listen, I'm not here to put Spotify or Google up on a pedestal. I can't stand that stuff, man. I fight to get on playlists myself, and watching my 0.00001 half of 1 cent, be distributed to me when I only have 300. Yeah, I got a raise. Exactly. When I only have 300,000 or 400,000 streams. All of that is wildly frustrating. Social media has reduced music to candy as opposed to soulful expressions. But here's the thing. Reality is a mixed bag, and you could have easily complained just as vigorously as he was 20 years ago, saying just a few labels control everything. You can't get, unless you're outside giving out CDs like Dave Matthews did, you can't get anywhere and you have to have a label deal. So, man, life is a mixed bag. And so when people say kids don't really like music anymore, or they're not being presented, that's a bunch of garbage, man. Look at ticket sales. Look at distribution. Look at the ingestion of music all over the world, a proliferation in Africa like we've never seen before. I own streaming services that are going into Africa in a way it's never happened before. So that guy, man, he's just bloviating.
Daniel Neruda writes in, "Look out, I'm agreeing with Gideon again."
I love Daniel Neruda.
We got to put that on a t-shirt. Whenever you do shows now on Break the Business, I'm going to have a t-shirt under my sweater that says, "Look out, I'm agreeing with Gideon again." And every time I agree with you, I'll just unzip the jacket to show the shirt. I'm with you on this in a lot of ways, especially about the idea of young people not engaging with music. I don't think that young people are engaging less. I think they're engaging differently, and the people in the video are confusing that with engaging less. Are young people sitting on their beds with, you know, big headphone cans on their ears,
totally,
listening,
man,
to a 12-track album all the way through without skips? No. They're engaging in music a different way, but not any less deep. Like, now they're taking music and they're syncing it with short form video and creating these memes on TikTok.
Yeah,
and is that less engagement? No, it's just different engagement. And to me, it's a pretty cool artistic expression, and they're doing really unique things with it. And your point about concert tickets exploding is, you know, very well taken. And your point about distribution is so great. I think we've so normalized the current distribution climate that we're in that we forget that 30 or 40 years ago, if you didn't have a record label, your distribution was just selling CDs, dude, out of the trunk of your car. Or maybe you could get your local record store, dude, to sell your album on consignment. And that was it.
And
now I in Miami could have somebody in Africa streaming my music tomorrow at a cost of $0, something that was unheard of a couple generations ago.
And you know what? Music is also more cross-generational than it ever was. I'm playing a show tomorrow night, and a bunch of people bought tickets from another show I played. And these kids, I say kids because, like, some of them are 25 years younger than I am, man, they were grooving to what we were doing. They were into it. They followed us on Instagram, and now they're coming to see a show. And these are people who are 18. These are people that are 60. These are people that are 28 that are thirsting and absolutely love the energy and electricity of live music. So I'm literally feeling that engagement literally right now through tomorrow night at 9 o'clock when my set starts. And that is not a plug. The show is sold out. I'm not trying to plug my show. I swear, Ryan, I swear.
But you are trying to get a second night from the venue, I'm sure.
That is not totally untrue.
This is a welcome departure, Gideon King, because Maybe it's because you have the new volume.com audience and you're trying to turn a new leaf and like take on a different persona. You are our resident curmudgeon around here. You're supposed to be the one that is lamenting the current state of music and how much better it used to be. And now you're the one waving the it ain't so bad flag.
I prefer the word seasoned introspection to curmudgeon. But you know what? It's your show. You choose the phraseology of the stuff you want to say. I can't control it, man.
I love that. Well, since you had spoken, Gideon, about your background in music tech, I wanted to get your perspective on this other story. Now this had a pretty crazy report that I saw on TikTok recently about the rise of streaming farms and how they are manipulating royalties. And I mean, I've always heard about streaming farms in news stories or whatever, but I've never actually seen what one looks like. And this now this report actually shows us what a streaming farm looks like, and it makes your jaw drop. Lauren, do you have this clip?
Yeah.
This is what a streaming farm looks like, aka the black market of the music industry. It's how some musicians and labels distort reality to push their tracks to the top of the charts and earn more money. Streaming farms use bots to artificially play music on platforms like Spotify or Apple Music to drastically inflate the numbers of streams a song gets. In March, a man in Denmark was sentenced to 18 months in prison for getting music streaming services to pay him $290,000 in royalties for fake streams. But that rare case is just a glimpse into the scale of this fraud. In a 2019 Rolling Stone article, Hopeless Records founder Louis Posen claimed this illegal practice potentially steals $300 million a year from artists with legitimate streams from real fans, equaling 3-4% of all streams. But that estimate is much higher now. A 2023 analyst report from the Financial Times found that up to 10% of all music streams globally are fake. This matters because there's a pool of money that streaming platforms distribute to the rights holders of songs. So when an artist is faking those streams, they're taking money out of that pool that could go to artists with legitimate streams.
I mean, I don't know what I expected when I got to see what an actual streaming farm looked like, because I've only read articles about these, but the radio audience has missed out, right? Because you saw in the video, it was just rows and rows of iPhones as far as the eye can see, manufacturing fake streams for artists through fake Spotify accounts to goose that artist's royalties and to increase their chart standing and ultimately take money out of other artists' pockets in the process. And it's a, you know, it's a big problem. I have some thoughts on how it can be addressed, but since you own a streaming service, you've probably encountered this issue. Love to get your perspective on this.
So as this show is in the service of artists, the first thing I want to say, now I'm going back to curmudgeon mode, by the way, and I'll try and speak quickly because I know you want to get the volume.com crew on. Streaming farms are bad from almost every angle and through every prism. They're even bad for artists. People pay money to get a streaming farm to goose their streams. Yes, it sucks when you release a song and you see that little less than sign saying less than 1,000 streams. I've been there. It's extremely embarrassing and it is wildly painful. However, when you go and buy those streams, A, there's no fan engagement. There's no ticket buying that emanates from that process. B, you could get blacklisted from Spotify, and that would be unpleasant because you can't go back on. It does nothing for your social media presence and it alienates the algorithm. So it's bad from that angle. It also is stealing money from artists with legit streams because even though, and this gets into some really anomalous, strange mathematical equations, even though every artist says, well, geez, I make 0.0 or whatever per stream, and you would think therefore that no matter how many artists there are, there's a fixed dollar that they'll make per stream. Actually, no. The streams per play fluctuate, and really what it amounts to, if I understand what I've been told by people that certainly know more than I know but who I trust, there's a pie.
Yeah.
And when Ryan Carella gets on and does his new song and does a streaming farm and gets 420,000 streams so that he looks cool, those payments are coming out of a fixed pie of dollars, of revenue dollars that Spotify or Google, or well, Spotify really is willing to allocate to artists. So it is a redistribution of those dollars, which rises to the level of theft or conversion. I'm not sure people should go to jail. You know, by the way, it's widespread. But we also have to remember that, like all crimes, okay, and like all misdemeanors, there are subtle gradations. There's also people that give money to people who buy a bunch of playlists,
yeah,
and then put you on the playlist. Now, that has much more of a patina, if not a substantive aspect of legitimacy, because those are real playlists. People are listening to them, and your songs are going on them, okay? All of us artists have considered these things, doing these things, in the desperation to not have the embarrassing de minimis less than 1,000 sign when you release a song. But I will say this to artists and to you, Ryan. Streaming farms are bad news, and so are others who guarantee. My personal, the best success I've had in getting my monthly followers up, okay, and everything, is the legit method of old-fashioned, well, with new modalities, old advertising, Facebook ads. Here's the song. Do you like it? Okay, here's a 30-second clip, a 15-second clip of, if you like it, click this, do that, whatever. Old-fashioned advertising, actually, which is really funny, works a lot better than cheating. So I don't mean to sound like Mr. Rogers and coming off like some pansy-ass moralist, but actually in this case, the right way is the better way to get fan engagement. I know, I've lived through all this and see it, and I sympathize with artists who say, for the love of God, this is my ninth song, and on my ninth song, I only have like 1,100 streams. That happened to me in the early years of my stuff, but I had a manager who was smart enough to say, stay away from the streaming farm things, man. It won't work, and it could hurt you. So there are so many gradations, there is so much to say about this, but I think it's safe to say, stay away from streaming farms. They simply don't do the trick.
Well, let me offer this suggestion to you, my dear friend, curmudgeon and pansy-ass moralist, Gideon King. I think part of the reason why these streaming farms can thrive gets back down to what you had just mentioned about how Spotify pays its artists. The royalty pool model they use, where they take everybody's $9.99 subscription put it in one giant pot, and then say, you know, if you have half of the if you got half of the streams that month, you get half the royalties in the pot. So that basically all the artists are competing over that money.
Yeah.
And so you wind up with, you know, if somebody gets a streaming farm to goose their numbers, it takes money out of other artists' pocket and creates this perverse incentive. I think a way that we can address this problem, and I certainly didn't invent this approach, but I would like to see it proliferate more throughout streaming services, is to adopt what's known as a user-centric royalty model. And what happens in this model is, instead of putting all of the royalties from all of the different subscribers in one pot, you treat every single subscriber as their own pot. And then whatever that one subscriber listens to, that royalty is divided among the artists that one subscriber listens to. So if I have a month where I do nothing but listen to Gideon King and City Blog on my Spotify account, I've had those months, those are good months, then Gideon King should get my entire monthly subscription, less whatever VIG Spotify gets. I think that model is more fair. It prevents a world where some users are effectively subsidizing other users' behavior on the platform, and it reduces the likelihood of streaming farms, because you're only going to get whatever subscription fee came from that particular streaming farm. I think this goes a long way in addressing the problem, and yet so many of these streaming services are so slow to adopt this model. I know SoundCloud talks about doing it. A couple other services do it. Spotify doesn't, and I think if they gave some thought to doing it, they could really do something to address fraud on the platform.
I won't speak for long, but it's a cool idea. The question is, it could be a great idea, but it could also be utopian and not work, in the sense that when I think that through, it reduces convexity to the upside for other artists and therefore Spotify, because of lack of allocation to dollars to moonshots. And so it's the allocation of capital to artists and to streams is like a magic potion that nobody's figured out yet. I hear where you're coming from. It's cool. It's creative. Weirdly, in my stomach, something holds me back from ever thinking it can work that way or will work that way, given market dynamics. I congratulate you on your optimism, but I'm worried.
I mean, the utopian optimist and the curmudgeon, that's what's going to bring people back every week. Yeah. This is a much longer conversation I'd love to have with you. But we should take a break so we can bring on Ben Holst and John Romero from Volume.com. Love to get their perspective on this, all the stories we're talking about this week, and learn more about this new platform that we're on. Don't go away. We're going to be back in 2 minutes here on Break the Business.
Break the Business is presented in cooperation with Ryan A. Corella, PA. Ryan A. Corella, PA is a law firm providing transactional entertainment legal services, including contracts, business formation, commercial law, copyright, trademark, and more. Ryan A. Corella, PA, Miami, Florida. rkpalaw.com.
Streaming services for Break the Business provided by LEK Entertainment. LEK Entertainment is a full-service entertainment company offering everything from consultations to full-scale events and productions, including audio and video productions, voiceovers, staged theatrical productions, script and music development, and streaming services. For more information, visit lekentertainment.com. LEK Entertainment wants to help you bring your story to life.
Thanks for supporting Break the Business. If you have a question or topic that you want us to discuss, email us at breakthebusiness@gmail.com. You can follow the host, that's me, on Twitter at Ryan KAIR, and you can follow the show at the BTB Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the show on Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook, and on all major podcast platforms. And now, let's get back to the show. Welcome back to Break the Business, you lovely humans. Ryan Corella here with Gideon King. Thank you for checking us out wherever you're checking us out. And there's an increasing number of places where you can check us out. All major podcast platforms, all major live streaming platforms, including our new home at volume.com. And on Sirius XM 145, much love to Slam Radio for being our satellite radio home. I love just how many new communities we're getting joining us, Gideon, and what it means for just getting to spread this message and make a lot more friends along the way. I'm excited. Let's go ahead and bring out our guest this week. Our guests this week are the Director of Creative Media and Brand Development at Volume.com and Volume.com's Chief Marketing Officer. Volume.com is an artist-first live streaming platform that partners with musicians, venues, and festivals to give awesome music a global reach and provide creators with a way to sell tickets to online shows and support or important social causes. Volume.com is also the new home for the Break the Business live stream, and we think that's just awesome. So let's go ahead and talk to our new friends, Ben Holst and John Romero. Hello to you both.
Unbelievable intro.
I wish I could say I wrote and recorded that with my amazing singing voice.
What the heck? That was amazing.
It is a pleasure to be chatting with you both. Let me open with this question. I'll pose this one to you, John. Can you tell the folks just a bit about Volume.com and what on earth did we just get ourselves into by joining you all?
Well, we're excited to have Break the Business on the platform. And yeah, Volume.com is an artist-first platform, like you said, really trying to bridge an easy, pathway for artists to connect, engage, and even monetize with their fans. So it's, but we're here for any kind of music creator, just like what you guys are doing and the community that you guys are bringing, but really have a home for artists and venues, festivals, and then again, just any kind of creators in the music ecosystem. We're really just trying to build a great destination for them.
I love that. And I know a big part of your mission, especially when it comes to empowering creators, is just making sure that they can get paid. I mean, you're baked into the bread of your monetization model. is making sure that like artists have direct routes to being able to make money on your platform, to be able to support themselves on your platform. Ben, can you tell us a little bit about how your monetization model works here at Volume and how it differs from other tech platforms that work with musicians?
Well, you know, I think the main thing is it's just the most generous, and there's not much more to be said about that. There's a lot of ways to monetize through Volume. And we've learned a lot about streaming over the past couple of years as far as what it can lead to. And I think when we first started, we put a lot of emphasis on the moment of the stream. And people were always, you know, coming out of the pandemic worried about like monetizing their time in that moment versus what like the awareness of a live stream can bring for other retail outlets, like, you know, for selling CDs or for selling merch, or for people even hearing about your band to decide to go to the concert that's down the street and take a risk on buying a ticket to show up. So I think, you know, over the time we've done a lot of research just to learn about the various, I guess, like sales leaders that a live stream can offer, and different ways to integrate live streaming behaviors into your regular, behaviors as a musician and as an artist.
Now, Ben, can you give us an example of some of this in action? Like what is an example of a success story of an artist who has found opportunity through some of the models that you use at Volume?
Well, I've got one in particular where I'm lucky enough to have a relationship with Amy Ray from the Indigo Girls. So about a year or so ago. Yeah, I've done a lot of work on some of the records and things. And in fact, that was before I joined volume.com, when we were all shut down, I was like the guy helping them live stream on Facebook. And our very first stream, when we were all bubbled up and locked down, they had something like 68,000 people watching. And I want to say it was like the second largest audience they'd ever played in front of, if not even more. So insane. But anyhow, I looked at Amy Ray's schedule and I happened to see that she was playing at Basement East. And about a week out, I called her up and I was like, "Hey, do you want to stream the show? We've got cameras in this venue." And she was like, "Yeah, oh my gosh." And she's self-managed. So, you know, it was a very easy conversation. She picked up the phone. "Hey, yeah, sure. We'd love to stream." I said, "Okay, let's, you know, figure out the brass tacks on it." It was very easy. We had cameras in the venue. Well, she sold a bunch of tickets for the live stream and, was able to essentially tip her band out at the end of a tour and make a couple extra $1,000 through a few phone calls and selling some live stream tickets to a show. And she got to capture the show at the end of a great run of tours. So the band was, you know, well rehearsed. So they weren't, you know, worried about what people were going to be seeing, you know, or anything like that. There was no self-consciousness about it because they were, you know, capturing a great show. So that was like a great, easy win, like a couple of phone calls, press a few buttons and a band makes a few extra $1,000 they didn't know they had access to just because there were cameras that we could turn on.
We love that. And John, to Ben's point about working with the venue to, you know, provide a wider audience for the Indigo Girls, to me, one of the things that distinguishes Volume in my eyes from a lot of the other streaming platforms out there that cater to the music community is the direct partnerships that you all forge with some of the most acclaimed venues in the country. How early did that become sort of part of the company strategy? And can you talk a little bit more about that phenomenon?
Yeah, I mean, I really think that's part of our secret sauce to what Volume is putting together, because not only are we creating a platform for these artists to start, you know, leveraging their performance via live stream, we're also building the infrastructure for them to do that. So building out easy venues for these artists to go live from is a huge part of what we're building, just because, again, what we're trying to do is not just provide a platform, but provide real support, real easy ways for artists to leverage live streaming. And again, we know that having these installs is the way to do that. So we love our partnerships and we love being able to, you know, be able to directly affect these venues and help that and help them get streaming more and more to their audiences.
Now, Gideon, I know you have to be blown away by volume.com, not just as a music fan, not just as a musician, but as an investor, somebody who works with a lot of music startups, music tech companies. You must be loving a lot about what this company's putting together here.
Oh yeah, it's very cool. And it's I don't want to say it's the future, but it's a huge part of the future. And COVID perversely was like an accelerant for the whole concept. I actually have a question for you guys. So live streaming, I've done it. And it's very cool, and I can see the economics behind it. But what are the methods to create energy? And what I mean by that is, when you play in front of live, you know, when you play in front of a live room, whether it's 20 people or 1,200 or 5,000 people, there's that energy. When I did my live streams, they were great and so on. But like, what is it about the production value that you guys can put down or employ that somehow transcends the fact that it is just a stream and there aren't people in the room? Because there's people I see. Mine were kind of lame, okay? But then I see
we
other
need
people
to know more.
But yeah, yeah. But then, yeah.
Share your shame,
I'm about
Gideon.
To, I'm about to bust on you, Gideon, too, because yeah. I heard you've got a sold-out show and you don't have a live stream component yet.
We're doing
oh,
we
what the hell,
we
man.
Work to do.
So,
we have
so,
work to
so
do.
So you're yeah. totally right. So, like, there's a bunch of people I see, and they, like, make it work. There's this guy who's kind of, like, cheesy, but he's a friend of mine, and I love him, from Blue Oyster Cult, named Richie Castellano, and he does these huge live streams. I don't know if you heard him. And, like, lots of people watch. And so what's the secret sauce to the production that transcends the sort of, I don't want to say lack of energy, but transcends the energy barrier? Because a couple of mine were okay. You know, I did Paste Studios. You guys know those, and all those mm-hmm. guys are Tiny Desk. And like, I see Anderson .Paak on Tiny Desk, and it's like the energy, the groove, and you feel it. And then I see another artist, and I'm like, that artist is great. I've seen them live. Why is it flat? You get the question I'm asking.
Yeah. I mean, I can run with this. I think it's twofold, but there has to be, in my opinion, there has to be a dialogue. There has to be a two-way conversation to some degree. And I don't think that it's, so, you know, we're in a live stream right now, and I'm looking and I see my wife showed up. So I can look at the chat and say, Lauren, thanks for showing up. This is just amazing that she took some time out. And now right. I'm back in. And that shouldn't take away, you know, I think.
By the way, now I know who wears the pants in the family. Just saying. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. It's yeah, fine. Yeah, I'm 100% okay with that.
Yeah.
So she got her shout out.
Right.
And we're all good. That's going to buy me another maybe week of good favor, because she's thrilled that she got the shout out. I made her feel special in that moment. Right. And she might come back again because we had that that exchange. She felt validated for showing up in that moment. And right. and now I'm back in, and I'm going to start the next song.
Right. The interaction is what you're saying.
And even if the interaction isn't in the moment, you know, like I've seen so many great streams, and I'm just want to hear the artist in the middle of a song go that they have the chat and say, "Hey, Bill 547, thanks for showing up, man. We used to have so much fun in college." All right, so this next song is about breaking the business.
Yeah.
And this is going out to Bill 547.
Okay. And by the way, I didn't do enough of that. You know, no, I mean it. I really mean it. What you're saying resonates, because I remember looking back and being like, really, why did I just stand there and just play the songs and not interact with the people who were literally reaching out to me? And I regretted it. You know, so what you say, man, it's instructive.
Gideon, I think it's this easy. And I mean, we can all attest to this. The best bands, and I've seen a lot of bands do this. If there's four people in the club, three of whom are bartenders, they give that bartender the best show of their life. Totally. Who's the bartender going to go home and tell about to come see that band again?
Totally. You know,
that experience in the chat, in a live stream, I think is the same way. We get so caught up in numbers. We forget about quality, which is, you know, kind of gets back to what you were saying about there's no cheat code, right? Mm. These three people had a great time tonight. They might tell their friend if I keep that consistency going. And, you know, it's not like a company line. It's just behavioral.
Do all the live streams show how many people are watching?
We don't.
You don't. I got to tell you, that was a big thing. And I had a lot of artist friends, some of which had some real followings, maybe not 10,000 people, but people filling venues, 800 to 1,000 people. And they didn't want to do it because they didn't want to see the number, you know, 68 going down to 51, up to 121. You know how it is. It's like your ego going up and down. So like to not have that, I think is awesome.
I think what we see, especially in today's world, is so many people chasing these vanity numbers. They're viral vanity numbers, and you know, they make you feel great, but really, you know, how many of those viral people are going to then, you know, come along with you and listen to that next song and do that? And really what we're finding is people that are willing to show up at a live stream are there to follow you. They're there to show up. And again, that's where we want to make sure that, you know, it's not about the numbers. It's about that interaction. It's about providing that engagement. Mm-hmm. And the fans just want that to, and they want to be seen. So yeah, it's not about the numbers. And we're really trying to flip the script on how artists are thinking about live streaming, because, you know, it's a core audience that you're engaging with. And it's not about going viral with your live stream. It's about having that interaction in a scalable way with a lot of fans if you're able to.
Yeah. Maintaining that level of positivity, whether you have four people watching or 4,000, is like, it's not easy, but it's everything.
Well, and Gideon, to your point, go ahead, Ben. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I said one of the members of our team, Greg, is in the chat, and he says, you can find out after the show what the numbers are. So the thing about working with volume is, you know, we're going to have a discussion after this show. We're going to share, you know, some information. What do you guys want to know? Who was it? Where'd they come from? Who logged in from what country? Okay, great. Here you know, let's talk about this. Let's give you some of that information that's going to help you learn how to target better. Learn what
we're sharing data with.
Yeah.
Totally.
We're sharing the data with our creators. And again, like, we're here to be artists first. And again, that's where we feel that these live streams and these engagement points with these fans is so important. But again, we're not just a platform to do it. We're providing support. We're providing venues to do it. But then we're providing real data to go and talk to these fans, because, you know, we really love the mission of what Break the Business is. And I think that's why this is such an amazing partnership for us, and to have you guys on the platform, because it really is in the ethos of what we're trying to do, help every artist reach their fans directly, you know, have ways to engage with them that we know that fans want to. Like, it's almost, performance is one of like the last stops for artists to make money now.
Yeah, totally. Like, that's totally true.
And so why is there not a digital way to do that? And that's the vision that we're trying to bring to the table. And so, you know, we can understand the need of Spotify and the discoverability. And, you know, we just want to offer a different solution for artists to do that. So that's why, again, we're just here to really just try to offer tools and really great, you know, support for artists. And, you know, Ryan, to one of your first questions, it's like, you know, one of the great benefits, you know, and financial benefits is, again, we're here to just share data. And, you know, one easy thing we do is we give 100% of tips to the artist. We're not
all right.
We're
not skimming off of those tips.
And again, it just shows the ethos and really the DNA of what we're trying to bring to the table. And so again,
how many shows like, I'm playing the show tomorrow night, right? How many shows are live streamed? And can you just do it? Does it have to be your thing? Or can someone just call you and say, hey, I got a show at City Winery and there's 420 people coming tomorrow, and can you guys live stream that show and plug into the board and so on? Can you just do it that way?
Well, we have a relationship with City Winery in New York now. We know the production team.
So,
can, and they've been really easy to work with the past couple of things we've done with them. So
they're great. I play there all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, it's venue dependent. You know, they've got the upstairs room and the downstairs room, and you can kind of do some different packages there with them. So it really depends on the venue, but we want to hear about it. Like, what we live for are the inbound phone calls. We want an artist like Gideon to say, I've got a sold out show. Are there any options? And if we personally, you know, can't do it, we might have a vendor, somebody on the street, you know, a camera crew or just a friendly who's got some gear, and we can pull something together, because, you know, we're pretty small team in the great, you know, picture of things. So we have humans that answer emails and want to help you out. So
gotcha.
We can
and we're also an open and we're also an open platform. So if you have, if there's skills of, you know, that, to do it, it's a plug and play kind of solution that anybody can come aboard. You know, we're not just for, you know, major venues or this or that. You know, we want it all. And we have a platform that anybody can plug in from your, you know, your studio to your favorite venue.
Mm-hmm. OBS and a laptop with a board feed. That's probably one of the easiest entry points. And we can help you.
Man, everybody should be, Ryan, everybody should. Why the hell am I not doing this tomorrow night, Ryan? I blame you, man. You're supposed to be my lawyer. That's not true. He's not my lawyer.
Hey,
but,
look, man, we're all here to learn tonight.
That's right. This is a safe space.
This is the dialogue, you know?
I quit.
It is a really fun medium. It gives creators something that I feel like they lost a little bit through the pandemic and just through the fact that our industry has become so much more about streaming, and it's just the connection. You get connection with your fans again, and it's wonderful. We have a question from a volume.com listener that I wanted to throw out to you guys. Our producer Lauren just sent this over to me. A volume.com viewer just says, why do you guys think that live streaming is such a triggering word in the music industry when it is clearly such an obvious media extension of performance? I mean,
that's a great question.
For as wonderful as this medium is, right? Live streaming is really special. It is polarizing. There are still people who say, you know, it's taking away from the true live performance. There's no substitute for being in the physical venue. And I don't think we're trying to replace the live music experience. In a lot of ways, Volume is actually amplifying that live music experience by partnering with venues. But John, love to get your thoughts on this perspective.
Great question.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I I'd love to hear some of your guys' perspective, because we wrestle with this all day long of why is the word live streaming so triggering, and why do artists have a hard time getting over this hurdle of flipping on a camera when they're performing? And we get it. Like, this, it is new. Thankfully to COVID, there was a catalyst to kind of push this thing to the forefront, but this is where things are obviously going to. So yeah, again, it's a question of why is it so triggering? And, you know, how do we get over that hump where, you know, we're artists and teams, you know, kind of think it's as a negative word and not an opportunity? Because again, we think it's an opportunity around, oh, you have a sold out show. Why would you not stream it? Oh, here's an opportunity to engage with fans around here. So again, like, it, for us, we think it's a key, you know, rather than a hurdle.
Definitely, yeah. Appreciate that. Yeah.
I mean, I'd love to expand on that a little bit. One of our members in the chat says promoters worry it will hurt ticket sales, and it's really a falsehood. You know, I think it's twofold, threefold, you know, it's layered, right? So we don't sell CDs anymore, right? So there's this clamoring for anything that can be retailed. Like, now it's a ticket to a show. So that's one of the main things we can sell. But we get short-sighted, I think, as musicians, and that value gets, you know, you're looking to the people that are in a 10-mile radius that are actually going to show up, at least on an independent level, right? And you forget about the rest of the world. Like, we have people all over the world that can log into volume.com. So there's so much, like, but we get tunnel visioned on, you know, I want to get everyone down the street to come see me.
Also, guys, listen,
pay for it. It's hard.
Guys, listen, the first cell phone sucked. The first electric cars didn't work. The early, very first live streams, like, that you were watching at the beginning of COVID, when you're like, wow, this is really bad. But now they're better. I mean, I have to tell you, like, I'm going to do this, because there's no reason, particularly at live shows, I'm going to do it. I'm going to call you guys and do it. But I mean, and I'm not just saying that. This has actually opened my eyes, and I'm sort of weirdly being lazy in not doing this. I just think it's triggering because, well, also, guys, as someone who plays live all the time, there's something about a camera that's a little frightening, but I think if there's the right vibe and it's married with the right venue and the right circumstance, it'll just become part of the landscape, the way everything, you know, the way everything does eventually, as it becomes more technologically and seamlessly threaded into the ecosystem.
No, I'm glad you said that, Kenny, because the technology is scary too. You know, we've all dealt with, you know, plugging in a mic, you know, whatever the hell it is, it's scary, right? And so I think the quality, you know, the potential for internet failure, like, there's so many links in the chain that can potentially, you know, scare people away from it. So I think we've all hit that, touched that hot coal at some point in our life, and yeah, it's, man, it just seems harder, like a hurdle. But the advantages, I think, with the proper preparation, and, you know, now the venues are opening up more, and, you know, we're building a network, it's going to be like, oh, we've got cameras in that network, you know, in that venue. So yeah, let's turn them on. Let's figure it out. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a lot easier.
Before we get to our final question, guys, I do want to give you one more opportunity to make everybody love you and to love volume.com by talking about the amazing charity work that you all do, the partnerships that your platform has with a lot of really reputable, great causes that you've like fully integrated your platform with. I think it's wonderful. We try to do a lot of that stuff around here on our show in terms of supporting organizations like Sweet Relief and raising money for hurricane relief and things like that. Can you talk a little bit about that, Ben?
Yeah, I think, you know, especially with our partnership with Music Gives to St. Jude Kids, a number of us in the company have been greatly affected by cancer and specifically childhood cancer. And we just, with the ability to use our platform to leverage donations and the way we can do very quick and easy and clean handoffs to nonprofits, it's an organization that just really touched us. And we had the opportunity to meet Jason Thomas Gordon, and he is the grandson of the gentleman that started St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, and really just brought us into the world of Music Gives to St. Jude Kids. And we just decided that was a partnership to really lean into for awareness and to use our streams for good. And it's just an opportunity to really make a difference. And it's an important part of our company culture.
Before we close out this week, I want to give the viewers and listeners an opportunity to meet somebody who is very special and so instrumental in making this show move smoothly every week. She has not popped in yet, and that is a crime. Producer Lauren, could you say hi to everybody, please, and just let them all know how important you are?
I'm supposed to let them know how important I am? That's a little like,
you should sit here and let me tell everybody how important you are.
You're important. Every week I start the show with a massive technological problem. And
usually the afternoon before.
Yeah, that's true. I call Lauren and I almost capsize every show with my lack of technological prowess. And Lauren fixes it with intelligence and calm. How's that, Ryan?
I'm pretty sure he just like fakes it to make me feel good, though. I think Lauren needs to feel needed. How do I make this mic work?
I'm genuinely an idiot. I'm telling you the truth.
I mean, it's you feel useful. You love to solve people's problems in the entertainment business.
Yes.
So, Lauren, we will not be here.
I asked a question and you're going to make me come on to ask it. Is that?
That's also true too. I do see that you sent in a question, and I figured it's a pretty dang good one. I'll let you go ahead and ask it before we do our final question.
Okay. I know another streaming platform I worked with figured this out, so I wanted to ask you guys if you've done that as well. ASCAP BMI venue type licenses for your streaming audiences. So like, do you guys have something like that so that the artists that are streaming to their audience are covered under one of those umbrella licenses, or do they have to get rights to the songs they perform on your platform?
Great question.
It's like a great question, but without an answer because you froze right before your answer.
Wait, Ben, can you start that over again? Boy, your stream gave out at just the wrong time.
You were like, the answer to all of your questions is
no,
and then you froze.
That's the algorithm working against us. They heard that. They heard that, and they shut me down.
Your legal department just canceled your stream.
They were triggered by live streaming.
We have relationships with them, and I think if you go to our terms of service and you can check it out. One of the first things I did when I joined the company is I sort of brought that in while we were generating a user group, because it's easier I think to get involved with those things before you have 5 million people on your site, right? So it's better to scale those relationships accordingly. So we do have contracts with BMI, ASCAP, and CSAC. And it's funny because Well, you know, so yeah, you can come on, you can cover a song.
You can do covers, yeah.
You can play your stuff.
That's
and
a big deal,
you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like to think so. That was an early move that we made, you know, while we were building and before we launched. So, you know, it's a safe place to come
and
play.
Is that, now I have to jump further and then I'm like, radio no, time.
We should automate the cue sheets. We could figure that out and build that in, but that's a product department. We'll get them on the show.
live? Like you can't play back, right? With those licenses, or is that a separate agreement?
I believe there are separate agreements, but again, this is getting into legal
terms. We'll get detail.
We have usually some fantastic with lawyers on our staff.
Yeah, usually with on-demand, it's trickier. It you may need a sync license, but we are asking some very unfair legal questions to people who are not right. in the legal department. Because
hey,
we want to talk to interesting
out.
People.
It's
well, they're
fair.
Looking
like,
out for
not...
the artist. They're making the effort, which I think is an important thing. If you're an artist and you're going to perform, they're working with those licensing agencies to make sure you're protected. So I appreciate that.
We want all those conversations. We want those, again, are also inbound phone calls that we greatly welcome. So we're here for the long term.
Our guests have been Ben Holst and John Romero from volume.com. Thank you for welcoming us to this platform. Before we let you go, gentlemen, we want to get one last answer from each of you on this. We'll start with you, John. Do you have any last tips for the indie creators out there to help them move their careers forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's, you know, it's a big mountain for indie creators. And again, I think that that's why we're excited to be here. We're excited to kind of partner with you guys to help teach, you know, indie creators and help give them paths to do it. So selfishly, you know, we think that indie creators should start building community, should start really engaging with their fans and having a direct relationship with them. And again, not I said it before, but not be chasing vanity metrics and really kind of go for direct connections with a fan. And what we're doing at Volume is bringing tools for artists to do that. So not only do I think that's some easy advice, we're trying to provide tools and then even support for artists to do that. So again, like there's a big mountain for indie artists today, and it really is a hand-to-hand combat kind of thing. And it's about knowing that fan. It's about having a real relationship with them. And there's a lot of ways to do that, and especially in the digital age. And we think live streaming can really be a part of that.
Ben, same question. Any last tips?
I would say simplicity and consistency. We're also working very hard to build direct-to-fan subscription services. And it doesn't have to be complicated. You don't have to have pages and pages of perks and tiers and all this kind of stuff. If you're doing a lot of these things where you're giving away really intimate time, you know, on other social media platforms for nothing, well, you know, save some of that and establish some premium access, you know, and you have a lot of ability to do those things in simple ways with the technology being democratized. To build those communities and have some fun. We work with a couple of artists, one of whom, David Cook, he's just a genius at building community. And he's got this wonderful programming that he does with his super fans. And so there's just a lot of opportunity to have fun with the platform. So I think that I would just encourage independent artists to get creative and figure out how to have a good time.
Our thanks to John Romero and Ben Holst from Volume.com. Thanks to co-host Gideon King and producer Lauren. And thanks to all of our new fans here at Volume.com. We are so thrilled to be joining your community. Thank you all so much for checking out Break the Business. We'll see you next week. Thanks.